Bucky's Auto Service Centers for 48 years. You've been helping out with your car and all your needs. What are you laughing at over there, Urson? What's going on?
The stuff my new you thing. Say right That's before be you turn on
thing.
The mic.
That's going to be my new thing.
If only people could hear you right before you turn on the mic.
Oh, at some point they will.
I know.
That's going to be Andrew screwing me. That's not the sound you're going to hear. It's not Andrew actually literally screwing me. It's Andrew screwing me by leaving my mic open. Yeah. That's what's
going to
do me
Or
in.
You're going to do it, or maybe one of your many, many friends here at Cairo might actually do that.
That line, by the way, that I delivered just before going on the air is from Bob Bowersox from QVC. Well, I used to work for QVC, Quality, Convenience, and Value. Bob Bowersox would say that just before they'd start selling some crap on the air to an 89-year-old woman with a oxygen tank. All right, here we go.
Key market sounds like maybe our listeners as well.
Hey, 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 don't do that. Come on now. Paul Allen's backed. Blockable?
Blockable, yes.
Delivers a first unit as part of a housing project in the Seattle suburbs. When I first saw the story, I thought, oh, these are those big empty containers, those big metal containers that they were kind of kicking around the idea of, let's stack those things up and make houses out of them. Then you told me, Mike, you said, no, they found out those things were not as efficient as possible. You had to make too many alterations to make them livable because they're just great big heavy metal
boxes.
You
had to cut almost 50% of them away right. Just to make them even livable.
I think we're going to need a window in here. Man, it's hot. So they decided not to go that way. They've got blockables, and they have now decided that they're going to be able to build these things as efficiently as possible, make them livable, and they're very adjustable as well.
Yeah, they were actually inspired by the container home movement in that containers are completely stackable.
Yep.
You can actually arrange them in a lot of patterns to make good. They're actually excellent for storage. If you have one on your property and you want to load a bunch of stuff into it, they're great. They're just not great living spaces. Mm-hmm. But what they are good for is stacking and modularity, and that's what the blockable is sort of inspired by container homes.
Okay.
And they're steel frame, but they actually have materials that insulate, and they put in windows. They're standardized sizes, and then you can get, you know, how elaborate you want it, the interior done mm-hmm. up. Somewhere between, they're saying between $25,000 and $100,000 per unit. My guess is it's probably going to be closer for a livable unit between $50,000 and $100,000. But they actually look reasonably functional uh-huh. right out of the bag, and you can build them remotely and then transport them wherever you need to and then hook up the, you know, required plumbing and electricity, things like that. And this is supposed to be an effort to, and you could put multiple ones on a relatively small lot pretty easily. It's supposed to be an effort to mm-hmm. to allow for purchased affordable housing.
Okay, so you have to make a certain amount of money or not make a certain amount of money in order to be able to buy these. Paul Allen has thrown $5 million into it. Is that what his initial investment? I think that's what it is from Vulcan.
Yeah.
So once they get them up, and as you pointed out, the cost anywhere, depending on what you put in the thing, anywhere between $20,000 and $100,000. And good.
Yeah, and they're trying to allow for more of this sort of size unit on properties in Seattle, mm-hmm. the so-called mother-in-law cottages. This is the type of thing, and I think that this is going to go at least a little ways toward providing more affordable housing in Seattle. I kind of like the idea. Let's see how it actually ends up, and let's just see also what the price per square foot to build these things are, because
yes.
if it turns out that they're going to start pushing $500 a square foot, you've made no actual impact.
Yeah.
But if you can keep it in the $150 to $200 range, maybe sub $300 range, you actually do have a home that is much less mm-hmm. expensive than the median house price in Seattle. And it doesn't have to be obviously limited to Seattle. It could be a lot of communities around here that could use something like that.
The story broke about the Tiki apartments that a lot of the residents had lived there were Section 8. Many of them had medical conditions that made it difficult for them to move around or them to work. And they were a small community there at the Tiki apartments in Tacoma. And then word came out that the owner had sold to a developer. And the owner, I think, only gave them, 30 days or 60 days notice?
I think it was 30 days.
30 days, which was inside the law. And man, it caught everybody's heart. And watching the video and seeing, I think as Cairo 7 did, I think all the news stations went there and interviewed the people that were at this Tiki apartment. And every single one of them had a story that could just break your heart. It got quick attention from the city council there in Tacoma. And they gave them sort of a stay that I think they gave them 90 days plus $2,000 to help move out.
Relocation costs.
Relocation.
Right, yeah.
They work with the developer. They work with the owner of Tiki Apartments. And now we find out that because of their fast work, they're now going to put these things in place and permanently change the law when it comes to residents being giving warning that the apartment is either going to be reconditioned in some way or sold in some way. It's a tenant's rights bill that the city council was able to put forward the other day.
Yeah, we can't have rent control legally in Washington State. So they're adding these tenants' rights things, some of which are already in place in Seattle. The 90-day notice. Yep. I think these sort of things, especially if you're tearing down an apartment complex, not to mention an apartment complex like this one, where it really was not just people who had a lot of individual medical needs, but had really developed, because they all worked together, kind of developed a community where they looked out for each other.
Yeah.
That is the loss of that community, particularly if you've got a set of problems that you're dealing with every day anyway, is traumatic and difficult. I think that what they're doing in Tacoma makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, obviously, the real estate community always balks at anything that restricts an ability to sort of redevelop a property. I get that. But I think in this case, providing a measure of protections, and you just build that into your plan when you buy an apartment complex like that, you know that 3 months is the earliest mm-hmm. you're going to get everyone out of the apartment complex.
Right.
I think that's fair.
And what happens is, having been a landlord, you tell somebody, I never had to do this, but you tell somebody that they're closing the apartment down or you have to leave in 90 days. What they do is they cheat you on the next month rent. They cheat you on the next one. They cheat you on the last one. So they rip you off for 90 days because they know that you're not going to come after them and you're going to kick them out of the apartment. Actually, I did have something similar to that when I asked the guy to leave. I said, I'm going to give you 60 days to leave. Is that going to give you enough time? And he said, oh, sure, that's plenty. And then I called him for the check at the end of March. No check, and then I called him for the check at the end of April. So he got a chance to live for free for 2 months. So that's one of the things. That's why they don't do it. That's why the landlords don't like to give somebody 90 days notice, because they know you'll squelch on them.
Yeah, I understand that, and I understand the way it works, and you can certainly add into regulations the way it works for an individual with a mother-in-law or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're buying an entire apartment complex,
yeah.
You know, your outside cost for redeveloping the whole complex or tearing it down and building something new, in many cases, what they'll do actually to get people out sooner is say, look, we will charge you nothing if you're out in 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
We won't actually, which is an incentive program to get people out quickly, because really what you're trying to do is raise the entire building anyway. You're
right.
Not really, your business plan does not factor in the 3 months rent on the 20 units in that apartment complex. It really doesn't. So I understand why you would want to do something like that.
Right.
I also understand, I get why a landlord wouldn't like it,
right.
But I'm not sure that your experience of someone cheating you out of the last 3 months' rent, which I think is what you said,
yeah.
is necessarily the universal expression.
Well, when I talked about this originally, and I had just mentioned that's why landlords, we heard from a number of landlords that owned a whole bunch of units, small and large, that said, yeah, if you give them the notice, they'll take advantage of it and not give you the money that they expect. And not many of so a lot of landlords, especially around here, will tell you they're small landlords that have 7 or 8 units at the most, or just a little bit more or something. They're not great big organizations with, you know, thousands and thousands of units. And they said, you know, it's important to be able to have the money come in every single month. So my experience with only one tenant, and others that back me up as well with their experience, will tell you that look out. If they can burn you, they'll burn you. But certainly the stories.
So you're saying that you'd rather not have the 90 days?
There's special situations for people. I guess the Section 8 would probably need a little bit of extra help. Yeah. If you're in there and you're so desperate. And what will end up happening is that some nonprofit will step in, or some government agency will have to step in and bridge the gap between the two. But, yeah, Section 8 probably gets a special pass on that.
So in some cases, you say actually the 90 days is fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're
we
poor.
Agree.
That's my experience. You become a landlord, we can talk about it. It sucks. It sucks being a landlord. Let's see. GOP senator says.
I am actually.
What do you got?
Yeah, I actually lease space. Next to my business that I then sublease out. So, yeah, I am effectively these folks' landlord.
How's that going?
It's going great.
Any problems?
Yeah, no.
They're paying all their bills?
They're paying the bills.
How about the garbage? Leaving garbage around?
Well, the garbage is part of the overall garbage that we pay for. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Oh, good. Okay. Hey, how about the key GOP senator says, I won't support any Supreme Court nominee that has shown hostility to Roe versus Wade. Of course, this is Susan What's her name from Maine? What's her last name? I'm looking for that thing right now. Susan Collins.
Susan Collins, and actually, and this also involves Lisa Murkowski.
Murkowski from Alaska.
I think I've made it pretty clear that if a nominee has demonstrated hostility to Roe v. Wade and has said that they're not going to abide by that longstanding precedent, that I could not support
that nominee.
How can you ask me to take a position on a nominee whose identity I don't yet know? That I'm amazed that people on both sides of the aisle have already committed to voting either for or against a nominee whose identity they do not know. And that's what you're asking me to do.
They've already come out with a hit, a slight, not quite hit, but a little bit of a nudge piece from NARAL. It's online and it's also print. And it says, has a picture of Trump there and says, you know, overturn Roe v. Wade. Do you believe him, Susan Collins? We do.
Right.
And that's the piece that's out there. So she hasn't, like she said, because what they're basically saying is, I, as the president, I'm going to appoint somebody. We're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And that is out there. And Susan Collins is reacting to the fact that she can't comment on anybody because she doesn't even quite know who the person is. She also noted it's not the only factor she wants to consider. Yes, Mike.
So the what's interesting about the most recent front runner, I guess you could say, I mean, today's front runner is a appellate court justice named Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes.
And she's a conservative. She has 7 kids, which is pretty unusual in America anymore. But here's the thing that she actually
Well, she adopted 2 from Haiti.
Is that what? Yeah. So that's what. Yeah. Well, even having 5.
Yeah.
Although my little sister has 5 kids,
and she got 1 with special needs.
Okay,
there you go.
Your point being,
just letting you know.
Oh, thank you for the run of things.
Got a big warm heart.
So the interesting thing is that she actually received, when she was an appellate court justice, received 55 votes, including a bunch of Democrats who approved her for the appellate court.
Yeah,
what from Joe Manchin, Joe Donnelly, Tim Kaine. Actually voted in her favor, and a bunch of moderate Republicans, including who? Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski.
Ah.
So the front runner right now is a person who already has made it through the federal gauntlet for and had a lot of Democratic support at the appellate level. You know, she could be the person who ends up with it because she's already gone through the crucible, so to speak.
I think they were talking to her about when she got her appointment, to the Seventh Circuit Court. It was Dianne Feinstein that said to her, your dogma lives loudly within you, and that is of concern. She's part of an organization called People of Praise. People of Praise has got Lutherans and Methodists and Catholics, and they're very, very religious in that the prayer is a big part. They work with disenfranchised, and it's just a charity organization. And but some people said, oh, yeah, these people are a bunch of sort of, it's a cult. It's a cult of some sort. It's been recognized by the Pope, and he's actually appointed 1 member from People of Praise in Portland, Oregon. So I don't know if they're necessarily a cult, but that might be something that they bring up against her. They tried to whack her with it a little bit when she first sat before the senators for the
Everyone who goes through the Supreme Court process understands there's going to be a lot of discussion about virtually everything they've done since Boy or Girl Scouts.
Right.
You know, this is the way the process works. She managed to get through the whole thing once before at the second highest level in federal court. My guess is that if they push her and nothing new comes out, she gets through again.
Susan Collins, by the way, back to her, she notes it's not the only factor she's considering.
What you're not allowing for is there could be a person who is very strongly for Roe v. Wade, but lacks the qualification, the experience, the integrity, has ethical issues in the background. The FBI report turned up some troubling issues. I'm not going to vote for that person just because they're for Roe v. Wade.
Okay, so as you mentioned, is Amy...
although there is no one going to be nominated who's demonstrated advocacy for Roe v. Wade. That is simply not going to happen. I appreciate her saying
they can
that,
take, they
but
can
that's
take
sort a, of that's kind of nutty, and she knows that full well.
Well, they could take a fairly impartial view and just look at it like it is written and it is a state law and we will respect that. And I have whoever the person is saying that would be able to say, listen, once you've set this thing 50 years ago, it is what it is. And I don't see any need Trump, most likely, as you point out, will probably go with Amy Coney Barrett as his big announcement coming up.
I think that's going
to
be it.
All right. Let's see. We still have to get to the fact that we don't have time to get to it. Let's see. Trans actors could be could have been cast instead of Scarlett Johansson in her new movie. Johansson is playing a male.
Yes.
Yes. And it's another case where some trans male actors are saying, hey, why not give us a chance as opposed to having Scarlett Johansson act this role?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of blowback when I think Glenn Close did this, did something similar. There's always been blowback when you've had, you know, somebody not of an ethnic group play somebody of that ethnic group, say, hey, why not just grab an actor from that group and maybe you'll give them a shot at something. You made the point earlier when we were talking about it. Yeah, but if you're an investor in a film, and everyone forgets that films are giant investment opportunities, they don't just pay for the movie. They actually pull in a group of investors who have a lot of influence, or producers, as they like to call them, who have a lot of influence on who you pick because they want to make a return on investment. So they want a bankable star. The problem with that argument, of course, is that then you never actually change the system. Mm-hmm. All you do is keep converting the same group of actors into a variety of ethnicities, and you never actually expand sort of that palette of actors that you're using who may bring something new and better to the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, as long as the money is the driver of the thing, you're going to have people continue to give Scarlett Johansson a chance because she's the reason people go to see it. Trans actress Trace Lisnett tweeted out, I wouldn't have been upset if I were getting in the same room as Jennifer Lawrence or Scarlett for cisgender roles, but we all know that's not the case. The term cisgender refers to people whose gender identity matches the sex they were assigned.
Yes.
Got it. All right. Scarlett Johansson is famous for doing all sorts of stretch roles, things that she's way outside her normal comfort zone with, and she'll probably do well with this one as well. Have you heard the plot? Do you know what it is about?
No, I don't know anything about it other than the fact that it's already got an early buzz for being controversial.
There you go. That's what you need. All right, come back. Let's see the economy. The best time for you to do this is last time this many people did this, I think it was like the late 1990s, and now even more people are doing it. You will give you some advice on if you decide to make this big choice, where you could end up. Good moves for everybody. Plus, also, if you're spending money on testosterone, if it's a cream or a shot or a pill, you will probably end up having to buy even more things.
Well, if you're a guy who does.
Yes. We've got gals doing it, you mean?
I don't know, but the study only was only about guys.
We'll find out what that is. We come right back. Tom McCurley right here at Cairo Radio. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Tomorrow, it's your chance to play the know-it-all quiz. That's right. Muckleshoot Bingo has got the know-it-all quiz. It brings you an opportunity, if you get on the phone, to get on the air to play. We'll ask you five questions and stories we've covered all week. All you have to do is stay conscious on the air, and we'll give you tickets, I assume, to a Mariners game, right? To a Mariners game? Is that what we're giving?
I think this time it's a gift card.
Gift card.
It's in the paper.
Mm.
At the bottom there?
Oh, yeah. $75 gift card. To Beardsley's Public House. Oh, that's John Howie's place over in Botho. Well, that'd be fun. Okay, $75. Head on over there. No Mariners game for you. You don't need that. Head on over to the Beardsley Public House and the brewery there in Botho. That's if you win. That's only if you win. If not, tough luck. Tough toenails.
You've got to go to that Mariners game and pay for it yourself.
That's how that works. That's tomorrow, the know-it-all quiz. You get a chance to read the answers, Mike Lewis.
It's always a thrilling part of my week.
Here we go. If you need further proof that the Trump economy is on fire, not since 2000 have so many people been doing this with their jobs. What are they doing, Mike Lewis?
They are quitting.
That's right. It is known as the quit rate.
Exactly.
Where what is interesting was that they said, well, you know, then wages will start to pick up because we're down to like 3.9% on this Trump economy that's on fire. And they thought, well, we'll start to see wages begin to increase. They're just slowly starting to just the teeniest increases in wages. So now what people are like, you know what? I'm going to do something different. I'm not going to wait for the boss to give me more money. I'm quitting.
That's always been the best way to get more money, though. I mean, in a good economy or down economy, you know, in most of the time career paths, weirdly enough, it's no different than actually any interpersonal relationship. As soon as you'd say, hey, I think I'm looking somewhere else, uh-huh. Your value goes through the roof. And in this particular case, if you actually jump ship, you can take fairly substantial gains. I mean, if you're getting a 3% raise if you're lucky at a place. But you can get, on average, according to the study anyway, you can go from like 10 or 15%, even higher jumps in pay. Of course, you're going to, provided you can, you know, it's in the same area and you can still provide the same level of comfort in your commute and things like that. You're not going to commute from or commute to L.A. or something like that.
I remember a friend of mine that was big at Wells Fargo said during the recession, 2008, 2009, he said, you know, 10% of the people are out of work and 90% of us are acting like we are. And you look at the numbers in 2008, 2009, the number of people that are quitting, people just trying to hang on, thinking, I better not quit. I better not ask for more money. In fact, at that point, did you have this offered to you to take a pay cut during the recession? Did you get that?
When I was at newspapers?
Yeah.
No, they didn't ever offer pay cuts in newspapers because they never offered really any good pay.
Okay.
And there wasn't a whole lot to cut from us.
I mean,
I remember we had a boom year when I was working for McClatchy Newspapers that they were hitting profit margins that Silicon Valley would be thrilled over. Something like a 22% for McClatchy Newspaper profit margin 1 year I was there. And then they handed out and I got the highest rate, like exceed standards or whatever it was, the highest rating, and I got a 1% raise, which actually meant I was losing space. The managing editor comes by, and I'm sitting eating lunch at my desk, and he says, hey, what you got there? And I said, my raise.
Uh-huh.
And then he kind of stormed off. But so I've never been in an industry where they just showered you with dough and then asked for a pay cut.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well,
you probably have.
King Five did that.
They
sent out a memo saying we'd like everybody to take a reduction in your income. While we get through these difficult times.
Yeah. Did you?
I said as soon
as... And did they get through the difficult times? Two questions.
Well, okay. I'll answer the first one first. I said, I will take a reduction if you show me upper management, including the general manager, the president of... Who owned us at the time? I can't remember. Below. Show me that the below guys are taking haircuts. If everybody's taking a haircut, if the guys at the top are taking haircuts, I'll do it as well. I never got a response back, so I didn't take it. But a lot of other people did. They're all like, oh, no, I'll do my part. I was like, no way.
Right. I think your response actually is the appropriate one.
Yeah. If everybody's in it, I got it. We're doing this across the board.
And was the ship steered through that storm?
They were letting
Or was there no actual storm?
It was bad. They were letting people go at such a rate. They had a cut, I think, like $30,000 every single week from their budget because they lost almost a third of their advertisers. A third. If you think about it, every third ad on television is a car ad. And as soon as the recession hit and all the credit froze up, there were no car dealers were like, we're not advertising.
Right.
Forget about it. And that really put everybody into a tailspin. So head on out. That's the best thing you can do. Your first job, your first offer that you get, that is where you really got to get as much as you possibly can because that becomes your new base. So you quit your job, you go out, you do some networking on LinkedIn, and you find the new start. Negotiate hard to make that first platform as big as it possibly can be or you'll end up with Mike Lewis getting 1%.
Right, because
every
at some point in your career, you're going to get fed the idea that, hey, everyone got a 2% raise.
Yeah.
To which you then respond, 2% of $80,000 a year is a significant bump compared to 2% of $40,000 a year.
Right. All righty. Economists are worried that we're not prepared for the fallout of automation. We know that the robots are coming. But what will possibly happen once they all get here? Interesting twist on this story from The Verge. They said that, it might actually create certain types of jobs once the robots get here.
Yeah, they do, actually. And until the robots start building the robots.
Right.
Then I guess that's probably when we get to that full circle and start to really worry. But actually, when the robots take over certain things, other areas expand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're finding now in the economy is that automation is a concern, and it is going to remove a whole category of jobs, but that doesn't mean that all jobs are going away. That just means that jobs are shifting.
Right. I thought the interesting thing was automation probably won't kill jobs, but it will create more bad ones.
Well, that's a possibility as well. Although, one of the things that's kind of become counterintuitive in this whole discussion of automation and jobs and jobs moving overseas is this. There's a whole category of jobs that can't move overseas.
That's right.
And with a school system that has actually de-emphasized trades, we're running into a situation where it's actually better. If you're graduating from high school right now, your desire to go to college is I think, should be honored, and you shouldn't want to not do it. But if you really want to get into the working world, moving into the trades, because you can't offload construction overseas.
Right. You can't outsource my hammer was the name of a book came out about 10 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah. And that's absolutely true right now. And if you look around at the guys, you know, and women work for, you know, the big HVAC companies building skyscrapers, they're pulling down a lot more than your average coder at Amazon is.
Don't you think that there will be eventually a tipping point when it comes to plumbers? The friend of mine told me, I said, how are the kids doing? His name is Dale. He said, good. My youngest was at Montana State, and he just wasn't working for him. He just wasn't much of a student. He's now, then he went to an apprentice program. He's now a plumber in Tacoma, and he's making $115,000 a year, and he's like 26 years old or 25 years old. Don't you think at some point the trades begin to get to the respect and get the attention of others when you see how much money you can possibly make in it?
Well, probably the return to the respect. I mean, when I was a kid, my mom and dad did not encourage me to go to college. It wasn't in there. They hadn't gone. It wasn't really in their landscape to encourage. But what my mom did encourage was the trades, because she was a secretary for the Teamsters as well as the three different stationary engineers as well as the Carpenters Union.
Yeah.
And she would drive us home from school. She would point out non-union job site, union job site, and that kind of, as we went through indoctrinating us as children, which actually was pretty effective, at least on me.
Uh-huh.
And she really wanted to go into the trade, because the trades then actually paid really well.
Yes.
And they still actually do pay, in certain cities, pay really well. And you can't send those jobs to a call center somewhere in India or to manufacturing in Mexico. You actually need to have a plumber show up at your location. And if you want a commercial plumber to show up at your business right now in Seattle, you're talking $300 to get them through the door. And then it goes from there. It's not insignificant.
I don't know why it fell out of favor, but you're right. It did for a while, and hopefully it starts to come back.
I agree.
But I think the one thing is that people don't want to really work that hard, and they don't realize plumbers, man, crawling in some crappy areas and then having to weld a pipe while they're upside down, and it's not the easiest job. To get your hands up inside that, and God knows what you're going to find, especially when it comes to hair.
But nor is sitting at a desk
about the human hair, that you get the big ball of it.
Right.
It's all knotted and twisted. It looks like somebody intentionally tied it in a knot. And you're reaching in and grabbing that like a Brillo pad coming out of a pipe. You know what I mean?
It's got to be kind of satisfying too, though.
That's true. It's true. Come right back. We'll talk about how men that put testosterone on their body, or at least have more testosterone than the average guy, it'll cost them a lot more. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We're supposed to get to that story that some listener sent in. Old video of John, listener email.
Yeah, next hour.
Okay, good. Testosterone pushes men to do something that guys without a whole bunch of testosterone don't do.
Fight. Argue? Make fun of their co-host?
What could it be? What are they fighting over, Mike?
Probably the latest really expensive man purse, or perhaps a new Corvette. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, as the study says, that men with higher testosterone purchase more luxury goods.
You know, I read the story. I thought it was super interesting, and only one question came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
How is that Porsche running?
Oh, hold on. No.
How's that new motorcycle doing?
Wow, I love that
motorcycle. How about that sailboat you bought earlier?
Hold on. Let me tell you.
You just prompted these questions.
No. The Porsche I got for $19,000. It's an 88, okay? And it has its problems. I'm not going to lie to you. Right. And I wasn't taking testosterone.
Do we have the rationalization music?
I wasn't taking the testosterone at the time of the Porsche purchase. And I don't believe this study. What they're really saying is that the... Don't you dare try to find music in there.
Rationalization music.
No, there is no such thing as rationalization music. I don't have to
defend. But there should be.
I don't have to defend testosterone. I don't believe the study necessarily. What they say is the guy wants to try to impress more women because his sex drive has increased.
That certainly doesn't sound like you at all, John.
And his sex drive increases. He then wants to attract women, so then he buys expensive watches. Oh, really? That's what you've got? Screw both of you. Why am I put on the defense?
I don't know. I was just asking how the Porsche is running.
Porsche is running great.
Porsche is running. New motorcycle is doing well. Sailboat's doing really well.
Oh, yeah. It's really.
These are all purchases since.
No. I see the people that have that buy all these big watches, the gigantic watches on their hands. The thing is that
is a nice watch you're wearing.
Oh, please! It's what was it, $6,000?
No, that is a lie. That is a piece of junk right here. That's a piece of junk.
More music.
I'm not. Here's what you need to know. Men at about the age of 34 lose about 3% of their testosterone every single year. Women hit their peak in their 20s, and they start to produce less testosterone. Both men and women have the highest amount of testosterone in the morning, and that's kind of like the best time if you want to, you know, a little extracurricular activity. It's in the morning, right. Not at night necessarily.
Like, you mean like shopping?
Exactly. Go out and buy some.
Go buy some expensive stuff.
Okay. Again, I don't. Why is this story in here?
I think you purchased that motorcycle in the morning, did you not? I think that's what you told me.
I needed to get rid of that other one because it was a great big hog of a bike. It was a Harley. It was a Kawasaki. And you were the one that talked me into it. And now when I go around the turns, when I go around the turns at 50 miles an hour.
It feels like your motorcycle's not.
Oh, it's a real motorcycle.
Yeah, it's a real
Triumph Bobber.
Yeah.
And I had guys come up to me yesterday and they're like, hey, cool bike, man. And they wanted to know all about it. Of course, I don't know anything about it. And then I can't get the gas to dispense from the nozzle. So at that point, embarrassingly, I had to turn to these three Harley guys and go, "Hey, how do I get the gas in the tank?" As I realized how bad,
and they looked at you and they said, "Low T."
That's the question. As I realized how dumb it sounded, my voice got higher. I got even more and more pathetic. Hey guys, how do you get the a little gas to come out and go into the tank because it's not coming out right now. Guy's like, what do you mean?
Got to take the gas cap off.
I got that. I couldn't, the thing wouldn't dispense because it did the little plastic thing that's supposed to go on there and save the environment. You have to pull that back.
So-called finger quote, save the environment.
You got to pull that back and then you insert the thing in the hole.
Right. Speaking of morning activities, I guess.
You know, I said that, and I thought, is he going to take the bait?
Yes. I well, always take the bait.
Here we go. We come back with the Tom and Curly Show. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Yes. And by the way, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, if she wanted to eat in a restaurant in Seattle, is it okay, or can we run her out of town? Right back.